Welcome to the program. I'm Roby Brock. For a slow spring break news week, there was plenty of action on the business and political fronts. One of the biggest stories of the week involved the surprise purchase of Delta Trust and Bank by Pine Bluff-based Simmons First for $66 million. Simmons First recently bought Metropolitan National Bank and is in the process this past week of unveiling the new signage. I sat down in the boardroom last week with Simmons First CEO George Makris to explore what's at work in all of this merger and acquisition activity. George Makris, first of all, congratulations. Another bank deal for Simmons Bank, Delta Trust and Bank this time, $66 million. Why is that bank acquisition, why is that a good fit for Simmons?
Roby, thanks, first of all. We are awfully excited about that. You know, in Central Arkansas with the Metropolitan purchase, we picked up a great retail franchise. What Delta brings to the table are the other lines of business that maybe Metropolitan didn't specialize in, like trust, investments, insurance. So now we really do have a complete line of well-established and well-respected financial services. So they really complemented each other. And the real long-term benefit to us is now we have an insurance agency, we have a broker-dealer operation, and we have a footprint all throughout Arkansas and outside of Arkansas where we can roll out these products successfully because we have that base now.
Tell me about the kind of the anatomy of an acquisition. When you come in and look at and the Metropolitan deal and the Delta Trust deal were two very, very different types of acquisition opportunities. But when you're looking at potential acquisitions, what are you looking at? What are the metrics that make sense for you? Obviously, there's some things that kind of complement or fill out a portfolio for you, but what are you looking at in terms of the numbers?
Well, in my past life, market share was pretty important. And I would tell you in the banking business, it's important also. So what we have to take a look at, first of all, is our strategy. Where do we want to grow? And what product lines do we need to grow? So I'll take you back a couple of years to our FDIC acquisitions. We got to look at a lot of opportunities and we passed on most of them because they just didn't fit in our strategy. The ones that we were successful on are in great markets. We've got St. Louis, Springfield, Kansas City, Wichita, Salina, and Sedalia are the main locations in that footprint. All of those are great areas that we'd like to grow into. So from a strategy standpoint, those new markets made sense to us. In Central Arkansas, obviously our share was not where we wanted it to be. So as we take a look at acquisitions, it is to build our franchise in those growth markets. Now, that doesn't mean that the only thing we're interested in is growth markets. I mentioned earlier that we love the agri business. So we would be very interested in agri-specific banks if they ever became available. But here's what's sort of happening in the M&A business. There are a lot of private banks that are just tired of what's going on in the industry today.
Regulatory primarily.
Primarily, that was sort of the icing on the cake. In many cases, we see private banks that have aging management and not a real good succession plan. We see boards of directors who are the shareholders in those banks who have just written checks to capitalize the growth of that bank throughout their tenure as owners. Well, instead of writing checks, they're starting to get interested in receiving checks. I mean, they're at that point in their life. So they're not willing to recapitalize the bank to allow it to continue to grow. So management that may not have a great succession plan, boards who have changed their focus for their wealth, and regulatory fatigue are the three main drivers of a lot of the M&A activity we see today.
And you know, it makes me sad that I didn't think to get into the sign business a few years ago so that I could capitalize on all these changes with these bank signs. So
that's right.
Should have gotten that. Maybe I could talk to you about a loan for starting a new business.
Absolutely. We'd be glad to talk to you about that. You know, speaking of signs, James Stobaugh, who is now with Simmons, was in Pine Bluff at National Bank of Commerce along with several other top-notch Arkansas bankers. He's the one that invited me to come on their board several years ago. And we went through the NBC, Worthen, Boatman's, Nations Bank, finally Bank of America transition, and it did seem like we were changing signs about every other month.
Yeah, I should have gotten in the sign business. I also asked Macris about the rash of bank robberies that have hit the capital city last week, and he tells me they appear to be random acts of coincidence coupled with some copycat mentality. You can catch our full interview with Simmons First CEO George Macris on our website at talkbusiness.net. A quick commercial break, and we'll run through the week's biggest business and political headlines, plus later in the program, my exclusive one-on-one with Karen Tyrone, Vice President for Pipeline Operations with ExxonMobil. 1 year after the Mayflower oil spill, what's next for the Pegasus pipeline? And did something beyond a manufacturing defect cause the pipeline to break? I'm Roby Brock. This is Talk Business and Politics. We're back right after this.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Let's run through this week's biggest business and political headlines. Combined personal incomes in Arkansas during 2013 grew 2.2%. below the 2.6% U.S. average, with the state's per capita average of $36,086 pushing Arkansas's national ranking from 45th in 2012 to 46th in 2013. Walmart executives keenly focused on improving comparable sales and driving top-line revenue are testing a new Savings Catcher pricing tool as a way to drive in-store traffic and hammer home their low-price message. The program only pertains to groceries, and it allows a Walmart customer to enter a number from the bottom of his receipt into the Walmart website. The system then analyzes all grocery advertisements in the area, and if other retailers had a lower price, the difference is credited to the shopper on a Walmart gift card. Little Rock will host 1 Million Cups, a program to engage, educate, and connect entrepreneurs, beginning April 16th. The program's model is consistent in each location. Each Wednesday morning, two founders will present their companies to an audience of mentors and other entrepreneurs. Each founder presents for 6 minutes and then fields audience questions for another 20 minutes. The program will be held at the Little Rock Chamber of Commerce. Republican gubernatorial candidate Curtis Coleman rolled out a tax cut and regulatory reduction plan that he said would benefit mom-and-pop businesses, encourage more military retirees to the state, and stoke economic investment in depressed parts of Arkansas. Coleman said his plan, which would eventually cost about $2.3 billion, would drop unemployment below 5%, add 100,000 new jobs to the state, and result in a 20% reduction in the number of Arkansans living below the poverty level. And of course, you can keep up with all of the week's business and political headlines daily at our website at talkbusiness.net. After this word from our sponsors, it's been 1 year since the Mayflower oil spill. What's next for the Pegasus pipeline? Could there be another factor in the pipeline's rupture? I'll sit down for an exclusive one-on-one with ExxonMobil Vice President for Pipeline Operations, Karen Tyrone, when we come back.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
You may be related to Rip Van Winkle if you haven't been aware or kept up with the business, political, and community ramifications of the Mayflower oil spill. 1 year after the major disaster, Mayflower is on the recovery. Central Arkansas leaders are still concerned with the shutdown pipeline's possible future. And ExxonMobil, well, it's been hearing from all sides. I sat down late last week with Karen Tyrone, Vice President for Pipeline Operations for ExxonMobil. We discussed what's next for the ruptured Pegasus pipeline, if it could eventually be moved from the Maumelle watershed, and what lessons have been learned by the world's largest public company.
Now you move to a phase where there's going to be a lot of what's called integrity testing of the pipeline. Kind of walk me through a little bit of what happens with integrity testing and how long could that take?
We are getting ready to submit a remedial work plan to PHMSA, the regulatory agency who oversees pipelines in the U.S. That plan is due to them by April 7th, so we will be submitting that plan by that timeline. Before I talk about the remedial work plan, we might want to talk about the investigation, which leads to the response that we'll take. So, over the past months, we've worked very hard to determine what happened in this failed section of pipe. I appreciate the patience that people have given us because it's not been a short time frame for this investigation. And what I'd like to tell you and what we can confirm is that we've completed our detailed investigation and we've confirmed that the factors that resulted in the failure of the pipeline in Mayflower, Arkansas are one, an original manufacturing defect that was created when the seam pipe was manufactured, combined with extreme metallurgical properties. And let me speak to that a minute. Extreme metallurgical properties can be a lot of things. So when you think about materials in general, not just pipe, they have different characteristics. On one end, if you think about glass, it's very hard, it does not bend. On another end, you might think about rubber that bends, is malleable. Materials are along that spectrum when you think about hardness and toughness. Pipe should be somewhere in the middle. In fact, you may not think about it, but pipe actually bends a little bit. So if you picture a weightlifter with heavy weights on each side and he's lifting that weight, you can actually visualize the bar bending over. That's the property that we would expect pipe to have. When we investigated this joint that failed in Mayflower, the chemical makeup of that joint was different than we have ever seen. We wanted time to investigate that chemical makeup and understand what it meant. PHMSA approved us taking more time to do that. And what we've learned that, in fact, that pipe has higher quantities of sulfur, manganese, and carbon than we've ever seen in a joint of pipe.
Why do you think that is?
We talked to an industry expert. We took advantage of global experts for ExxonMobil, but in addition to that, we brought in a gentleman named Dr. John Kiefner. He is the foremost expert on pipe integrity, and we talked to him about that very question. What's going on with this joint of pipe? Dr. Kiefner confirmed for us that he has never seen the combination of extreme properties that we observed in this pipe, and he has looked at hundreds of samples of seamed pipe in his work. He's been in pipeline integrity for decades and brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to the table. So when we looked at this pipe and asked ourselves, where did this pipe come from? We looked at the manufacturing process. We know this pipe was manufactured a long time ago. And in that process, we suspect that something in the chemistry was not uniform. It wasn't mixed well. We can only speculate. There are no records that confirm exactly how this joint was made.
That should give you confidence that you've isolated the problem, but maybe a lack of confidence that this could be in other parts of the pipeline, couldn't it?
That's what we had to follow up on. What we did was test not only the joint that failed, but the joints on either side. So we actually excavated and cut out pieces of pipe that adjoined the failed segment. Those segments did not exhibit these properties. Because it might be a natural thought pattern to say if you have one joint here, all the joints along that segment are going to exhibit those same properties. We did not find that. So what we've done is put together a remedial work plan that will address the learnings of the investigation. And what that plan looks like, it's a layered approach. I call it a holistic approach to look at the pipeline integrity, and it combines multiple factors. The first is taking the data from the inline inspection tool that was run prior to the failure, taking that raw data, analyzing it, and addressing any anomaly that is shown in that data. Addressing an anomaly means we'll go to the field, we'll dig up that piece of pipe, we'll do in-the-ditch testing to assess if it's of concern. In addition to that, we're going to be testing for metallurgical properties. So to your point, how will you know if you have another piece of pipe that demonstrates those chemical properties? For every dig that we do to verify the tool run, we're test for those metallurgical properties. That's the first step. After we do all those repairs, we will also address the raw data itself from the tool run. What's important about that is that we use the most advanced algorithms to analyze that data and assess where the pipe could have these original manufacturing defects. I'll tell you that progress has been made in recent times on the ability to analyze that raw data, both in industry and since our event in Mayflower. A lot of focus has been put on it. We have worked with experts on it. Third parties have brought technology to the table, and we believe significant advancements have taken place. So we'll do the repairs, if necessary, for all of those locations. We will conduct a third-party analysis, which is well underway, on the raw data of this tool run. After we complete that, we will also do a hydro test. What's unique about this hydro test that we're proposing in the remedial work plan is that it's called a spike hydro test. So we're actually going to take the pipe up to 1.39 times the maximum operating pressure that we anticipate running. And what that does is it actually stresses the pipe to reveal any weak points. The purpose of a spike hydro test is to reveal and eliminate any of these weak original manufacturing defects that could ultimately be an integrity problem for you.
Safe to assume this is the first type of defect, burst, problem that you've encountered in your tenure that kind of speaks to these characteristics. You've never seen anything like this before, have you?
Correct. We have not seen anything like this, and industry has not seen anything like
and
this.
And that's your reason for precaution?
That is our reason for precaution. I mean, we took months to analyze the data. We wanted to make sure we understood what happened. Part of that analysis was eliminating other potential contributing factors. So during that time, we looked at internal corrosion, external corrosion, we looked at external forces, and were able through metallurgical testing to eliminate any of those potential contributing factors. The testing that we're proposing, the spike hydro test, is PHMSA's recommended approach. We have not done a spike hydro test on this pipeline. It will be testing the pipeline beyond what it's ever been tested before. Once we complete that spike hydro test, we'll back it down to what's considered a normal hydro test, which is more of just a strength test, which is 1.25 times the operating pressure. But the strength test is the normal test. This spike test is what's new and different for this pipeline, which is designed to reveal any flaws, eliminate them, or confirm that none exist there.
How long could all of this testing take place? And I guess to the context of that question, how long could this pipeline remain not in use while you do this testing?
The remedial work plan that we're proposing will take some time to execute. First of all, we've got to do the digs, the testing in the ditch, any repair that is necessary, and then the hydrostatic testing. So we anticipate it will take a minimum of a year.
Mm-hmm. So you've been without the pipeline for a year. You could be without the pipeline for another year while you test. Do you still need this pipeline?
We think the pipeline is a very valuable asset. I think for the country, moving hydrocarbons around is important for our lifestyles that we enjoy, and pipelines are a safe way to do that. The Pegasus pipeline runs from Illinois to southern Texas. Mm-hmm. It brings crude from a production facility to where the heart of the refineries are. So it's an asset that is key to the infrastructure that we have. It moves hydrocarbons from one place to a place where they can be turned into a usable product. So yes, we anticipate a use for the pipeline and a need for the pipeline.
Obviously a big question for Central Arkansas residents, business leaders, community leaders is there any possibility that this pipeline is moved out of the watershed? Is there any possibility that this pipeline does not get reactivated?
I would hate to speculate on next steps. I think the remedial work plan that we have proposed is thorough, holistic approach. And what I'll tell you is that when we execute that remedial work plan, we will repair, reinforce, or replace the pipe as necessary to ensure the integrity of the pipeline.
You want it to reopen, but the possibility does remain that it may not reopen. If PHMSA doesn't approve your remedial plan, or if the tests prove that it's not up to capability, or do you just replace what needs to be replaced in hopes that you can reopen it?
We won't restart the pipeline without PHMSA approval and without convincing ourselves that we can safely do that.
That's Karen Tyrone, Vice President for Pipeline Operations for ExxonMobil. If you want to watch our full interview, you can do so at talkbusiness.net. That's all for this week's edition of Talk Business. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. Drop me an email at roby@talkbusiness.net and share your thoughts and comments. Hope that you have a busy and a productive week. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, take care.